Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post 40. Created and hosted by me, journalist and author Sam Baker. This week, I've somehow wangled my way into the kitchen of a woman who has more energy than anyone I've ever met. Emma Freud is a broadcaster, presenter, columnist, fundraiser, for want of a better way of putting the incredible work she and her partner Richard Curtis do with Comic Relief, and she's got four kids and a bazillion pets, and she's not afraid to call a spade a spade.
Oh, wow.
I went in and I said, I think you should test me for Alzheimer's. And she said, are you menopausal? And I went, yeah. And she went, well, it's that. And I went, no, it can't be that, because it's really serious. And she said, but it is that, because that's one of the main symptoms.
Emma shares her thoughts on ageing, adapting, and how she'll never be afraid to admit her age. There's also some rudeness, usually from me.
Emma, this is like sitting in the middle of my Pinterest board. I'm not leaving. You're going to have to. It's me. And by the way, everybody, if there's any strange noises, it's because at our feet there is a cat and four kittens. And the cat has just remembered what a pain in the ass kittens are.
And walked out in a huff.
Yeah, she's gone. And the kittens have now gone to sleep. Oh, look at them. They're so cute.
2 weeks old.
Oh.
They sleep in my bed on the pillow next to me.
Oh, what's the cat's name, by the way?
She was named by my teenage son, and she's called El Chapo Jr.
Oh, hello, El Chapo Jr. Our first cat was named by my teenage stepson, and he was called Shinobi after a computer game, so...
Yeah, okay, I get it.
It's fine. If you could just, like, keep it down, El Chapo Jr.
Yeah, and thank you for using her full name. He won't allow anyone to call her anything for short. You have to use the full name at all times.
What would you call her, El Chap?
El. Pretty name, Chapo.
Chapo.
None of it's allowed.
No. Junior.
No, none of this.
No. So, Emma.
Yes. Madam.
You are the definitive polymath, aren't you?
I don't even know what that means.
Polymath is a person who's done absolutely loads and does it all really, really well, I believe.
Wow.
Cue loads of people writing comments telling me that's not what a polymath is.
Isn't it called multi-hyphenated or something now?
Oh, it's what the millennials called multi-hyphenated. Right. Yeah, you are the definitive multi-hyphenate. Let's be down with the kids. Although they're not kids now, are they?
No.
They're practically grown up.
Yes.
But columnist, producer, broadcaster, you know, co-brains behind Comic Relief. Exec producer of Red Nose Day?
Yeah.
Or director? What do we call you?
I think I'm exec producer of Comic Relief, including Red Nose Day and Sport Relief. This is the period where I have to write and ask famous people to do things they don't want to do. I wrote to Batman yesterday.
To who?
The new Batman.
Oh.
And said, would you...
Dear Batman.
Yeah, literally. And said, would he say hello to a winner of a prize on the set of Batman this summer?
Surely he will.
He did, yeah, he said yes. But
not too big enough.
No, it really isn't. But what it is it's an email that comes from so deep down in the pit of your stomach, it's virtually in your womb. It's an intrusion, it's a cheek, it's painful to write those words and then press send when you're doing it for the 20th time that day to someone who owes you nothing and who doesn't want to do, I mean, a meet and greet for 5 minutes on a set is an easy one, but, you know, asking people if they'll allow cameras into their houses or if they'll give up a day of their lives to come and do a bit of filming or to appear on a live show, you know, these are all things that people don't want to do. And honestly, it comes from a place of such pain with me now after 30 years of doing it. And it's very difficult to remember that I'm doing it for the projects that we support, not for me. Because it feels like I'm saying, do this for me.
But that nobody who gets that email thinks that you're asking for yourself, surely.
Well, no, I don't think anybody does with their front brain. But at the back of their mind, especially if it's the third or fourth or 23rd time that I've asked them to do something, it's like, oh, Jesus, will that girl just go? You know, it's just that there's...
I bet they don't think that.
Scarlett, my daughter, and I have got a little phrase that we both use all the time, because in her activist world, she does a lot of begging, if you like, as well. There's a phrase that we both put at the bottom of most emails, which is, no worries if not. Is this okay? No worries if not.
Don't you think that's such a girl thing?
It's though? Such, it's like saying just. It's such a girl thing. No worries if not. But we want it on a T-shirt.
I feel like I should get you a mug made.
No worries if not.
What's your hit rate? How often do people say...
I don't know. Yes. I put a lot of work into most of the letters. I never do generics. Probably 50%, not more than that, you know. Because the most valuable thing that you can give to a charity like Comic Relief is something you don't want to do. You know, asking people something they do want to do is not necessarily valuable. You know, asking someone for a signed copy of their book is easy and everybody would say yes to that. But I can't turn that into tens of thousands of pounds.
They're not money can't buy, are they? No. Signed copies of books.
So, like, we did a thing the other day where we offered breakfast with seven Doctor Who's, and people paid £10 to enter, and one person won.
Do you know what people would pay for? A trip to Sephora with Marion.
A trip to Sephora with Marion Keys. That's genius. Hang on, need to write that one down.
Write it down.
That's great.
That didn't come out of the blue. We were just talking about Marion having been to Sephora.
Yeah, she loves Sephora. One of my favourite ones we did afternoon tea with the whole of the royal family from The Crown.
Yeah.
And it was great.
So how much does something like that typically raise?
Come on, what that one raised? The Doctor Who one raised £750,000.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And Breakfast with Sherlock raised £800,000. Even afternoon having a picnic in Notting Hill with Hugh Grant raised £500,000.
Even? You said that even like it was
well,
like...
Hugh. Who wants to have tea with you?
Well, not me, to be honest, but lots of people do. Lots of people's mums do.
Well, lots of people did. £500,000 worth of people did, no. They're incredible new ways to raise money, but they're agony to try and get.
So last year you raised, what, 65
million? Quid, yeah.
God, and is the pressure on you every year to push it up?
Yeah, or at least to raise something. We have a grants team who are in permanent contact with 1,200 different projects all over the world. And every time they go to a project, which is, you know, every day, and check up on how it's going and see the need, or they put out a call for projects in, let's say, we did one last month for domestic violence, just saying we have a vat of money for domestic violence, you know, what is the biggest need out there? And we get five times as many requests for funds as we can give. And so the pressure really is from them. You know, it isn't an ego pressure or a kind of totaliser pressure. It's a pressure knowing that the work that we're doing is so important and right and good and fantastic that it needs to be brilliantly funded.
I'm not surprised you mentioned domestic violence. That's a subject really close to my heart.
Is it?
Yeah, I work with Refuge quite a bit. And they're just so under the cosh. Every time there's a government cut...
It was first thing to go.
It's the first thing to go. It's just like it doesn't matter.
But then you can come in it from such interesting angles. Like, we've got a project we're funding at the moment, which is where we pay for training for plumbers to be trained in how to spot the early signs of domestic abuse in the houses in which they go and do their plumbing.
That is brilliant.
And having spotted it, we then train them on where to go confidentially and discreetly to be able to tell the right people that particular house they think is worth keeping an eye on.
That's That's incredible.
It's such a good project.
Why did I not know about that project?
I don't know, but you do now.
How did you feel last year about that Comic Relief backlash?
Oh, I should have known you'd ask me that, Sam. I forget. Sorry. You're such a joke. It was the worst thing that's happened in the 30 years that I've been at Comic Relief. It was heartbreaking. We come from a good place, obviously. You know, we've spent £1.4 billion on people living in extreme poverty, either here or internationally, since Comic Relief started. We got a lot wrong in many ways, and we were told about it very, very publicly. And we learned a lot from it, and we listened, and we changed a lot. We cut some films, we edited other films, we changed our attitudes, we tried to address the things that people felt we'd done wrong. We did a lot of talking, we did a lot of listening, and I think a year later we are better than we were then in terms of the way we represent the people in the projects that we support. I think our grants team are astonishing. I think we're good at raising money, but I think our grants team are the best thing about Comic Relief. The way we spend the money is just exemplary, I think. It's really well researched, it's really well thought through. It's from people, the grants are given out by people who know the areas they're working in, whether it is extreme poverty, whether it is slum dwelling, whether it is, you know, violence against children, whether it's refugees, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's the elderly, whether it's Alzheimer's, you know, whatever the areas that we work in, they really know what makes a real difference in those areas. And we address it very well, but the way that we portray that work needs to be entirely, you know, inclusive and non-patronising. But I never have any doubt that the work that we're doing isn't good. What I do need to permanently address is the way that we're doing it, because if you're alienating, you know, some people, not all people, but if you're alienating some people with the way that you're portraying the work, then that doesn't work.
You spend, well, more than half your time a year on Comic Relief.
Yeah.
I guess. And
most of it, really.
The rest of your time, your other job, executive producing, script editing, being the other half of Richard Curtis's brain, or he's the other half of yours. How would you put it exactly?
I don't know. We're just sort of partners in all of it, really. And so he's never written a line for anything that we've made together, which hasn't gone via me as many times as it's gone via him, really. So I read everything of everything and script edit everything that he does, and we discuss everything. So that's just a sort of team thing, really. It's not very good with words, but I suppose it is script editor. But then I've co-produced as well the last couple of films that we've done. And that works. It works really well for us. But mostly when I'm not Comic Reliefing or Richarding, I'm a mum. Too many children.
Four.
At least.
At least. Where are the others tucked away?
All over the shop.
So four kids, four kittens, two big cats, Badger being a very big cat.
Yeah. A dog.
One dog?
Yeah, a tortoise.
One tortoise.
Two columns. They take up quite a lot of work. But you know what I did with the columns? So I began as a writer and I love writing. And it feels like a guilty pleasure. It feels like I shouldn't be doing this. If I'm not doing Comic Relief or working on our latest film project or looking after my kids, then I really should be, you know, doing the washing up. But I hold on to these two columns that I do because they give me utter joy.
Especially the BBC Good Food one.
Especially the BBC Good Food one. So I spent the last 2 years...
Any time you decide to dump that...
No, not doing it. No, you can't have it. You can fuck off, Sam. It's such a joy. So once a month, a chef comes here and I cook them their food. And it means that I have to get good at that food to do it. So it's like a little cooking course that I've done ongoing for 2 years now. And it's the best thing. It's just I want to give the feedback because it's such a joy for me. And I love cooking anyway, and I'm all right at it. And so that's just my heaven. And then the other column I've got, which is in the Times, and then I do it for an American magazine as well, online one, is called Natural Highs, and it's ways to get high without drugs or drink.
What's the best high you've found, natural high?
I think being whipped with birch sticks was quite good in a Russian sauna. That was quite interesting. That genuinely made me buzzy for the entire day. I did cryotherapy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was rubbish. I mean, it was quite clever because you get zingy at the end of it. But the one I went to was in the middle of Harvey Nichols, and I basically came out and bought the first thing that I saw, which I've never worn since. Because you're so, oh, look, floral skirt. I'll buy that. I'll become that person now.
The woman who dresses in black.
Always,
to toe,
exactly.
Always.
Took the floral skirt
That's
back
not
for
the
a
right
refund.
Environment for it, though, is it?
Harvey? I know, it was weird.
Loads of people say that, you know, that really cold water immersion or, you know, ice water is really a big high as well. Have you done that?
I did that as part of the Russian spa, actually. You have to go into a tub of ice water. I think finding highs in other ways, you know, you either become an old addict or you start looking for your buzz legally and naturally.
That's one of the things that's been really interesting about this for this podcast, the different stages people are at. Some people have just been coming into menopause and other people have been going out the other side, but the different ways people have found through coping with it. You're just 58?
Yeah.
Looking 38.
Oh, don't say that.
Looking amazing.
I think I'm finally looking like a grown-up. I was really pleased.
You do look like a grown-up, but a hot grown-up.
Oh, ta.
Annoyingly. No, when I got here, Emma opened the door with fabulous smooth hair. And I've just walked from the tube and my hair is a big frizzy mess. And I've got grey at the front that I don't know what to do with. And Emma is immaculately dark from head to toe.
Yes, I dye my hair.
How long have you been dyeing it?
Since I was 24.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? If you've been doing it a really, really long time, it's not a decision, is it? You just keep doing it.
Well, it would be a big decision not to. I've done it, I mean, not because I was covering anything up, but just because, and this is my hair colour, but just to make it kind of more so, you know, to sort of like very dark brown rather than boring dark brown. But I haven't got a lot of grey. My mum's not grey yet, and she's 92. But I have got a little bit of grey. And I was thinking about that because I'm very anti-work. But I dye my hair. So I don't know what sort of double standard that is. And the more grey I get, the more I'll dye. I don't want to embrace my inner grey.
No, I know.
So I don't quite know how I allow myself to go, I think it's weird when people have surgery on their faces and pretend that they're younger than they are, when I dye my hair and therefore pretend I'm less grey than I am.
But each to their own. I mean, I go through phases with my hair where, remember, I go to hairdressers like once every 6 months, tops. And I went to the guy who's always done my hair and said, oh, Adam, I think it's time. I think I've got to dye it. And it took him hours to pick himself up off the floor laughing. He was like, you can't sit in this chair for more than an hour once every 6 months. How the hell are you going to do that? Dye it, ginger.
It's a
and
commitment.
And then do the every 3 week maintenance. It's like, it's
And it really is every 3 week. And it's really dull. But I just take my computer into the hairdresser now and sit there and write.
Just do it. It's just part of it.
Yeah. And actually, I quite like it. And quite often when they finish, I say, can I stay? Because I'm really settled. I've got a coffee and I'm in the middle of an article.
You mentioned your mum then. Has she been an influence on you as you've kind of grown up, shall we say? Aged
got
is such
older.
A horrible word, isn't it?
No, I'm good with aged. I'm good with old. I'm good with geriatric. I'm good with OAP. I'm good with all of these words.
You can reclaim all those things.
I really, I feel really strongly about it. I don't understand how we can have created this system where it's apparently not okay to be older when it's the only thing that any of us are ever going to be, you know,
and
if we're lucky.
And the alternative is so much worse.
What, dying?
Yeah.
Yeah, quite. So it's just bananas, and I'm just not. So I give out my age more often than I possibly, I mean, I will say I'm 58 as loudly and as often as I can.
When I saw you last autumn, you said nearly 60.
Yes, I've got a little thing around my neck, a little necklace that says almost 60. And I felt
my just embracing it earlier.
I think
getting
so.
Used to the idea.
Well, no, it's not getting used to it. It's genuinely embracing it, because what's the fucking point otherwise? My mum's 92 and she won't. She's weird about it. So she keeps saying, stop telling people I'm 92. It's like, Mum, it's just fantastic. You're 92. You're in good health. You've got your marbles. You go swimming every single morning. I'd rather hang out with you than most people I know. What's not to embrace about that, you know? I mean, I feel very strongly about it, and I'm absolutely aware that I am solvent and healthy.
Mm.
And if I wasn't solvent or healthy, then this conversation would make me want to vomit. But given the fact that I'm really appreciative and aware of how lucky I am to be solvent and healthy, I am diving into my old age.
I mean, economic power, everything comes back to it, doesn't it? And so really, even now, so few women have it. Financial independence.
Yeah. No, it's huge. It's huge. And, you know, my mum didn't have it as a kid. And I mean, as a young woman at all. You know, she was a young woman in the 40s. So obviously, you know, that doesn't happen at all. But she's incredible, Mum. She's an absolute role model for me.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Body image is one of the things that I think is a real... For me, it feels like one of those real generational divide things.
Yes.
You know, I grew up in a kind of a ordinary 70s household, the F plan diet, the green goddess, all of that stuff, all of those workouts. I could tell you, literally you could give me a test now, I can tell you the calories in anything. With the calorie book in the junk drawer in the kitchen, I revised that more than any exam ever. And much as I know I'm here, I'm healthy, I'm great, I'm not as thin as I used to be, I'm fine, it all works. I still want to lose 7 pounds and I hate myself for it. Has Scarlett had an influence on you in that regard? Or are you still Gen X? Or are you boomer? I know, I'm here with a boomer. Well, Gen X, boomer, cusp, whatever. Or are you starting to be influenced by Scarlett's more progressive attitude to body image and that stuff?
Well, I think I am influenced by her more progressive attitude, not just to body positivity, but to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that I used to see with my glasses on, I've had to take my glasses off and have a little go at putting her glasses on. From attitudes to feminism, to sexism, to racism, to my friends, to the diversity amongst my friends, to what I eat, what I don't eat, to license to be, license not to be, to criticism, to social media, online bullying, to, I never realised that I would learn as much from my kids, as it turns out that I am having to. And we clash a lot, and I will say things and she will say to me, "Your mum, you can't say that again." And unlike my mum, I do not say, "Well, I just did." I say, "Oh Christ, what have I fucking said wrong now? You know what? No, I don't agree with that. Oh, okay, I see your point. Well, no, but if I... Oh, yeah, okay, you're right." You know, it's that kind of dialogue that happens a lot. And she's quite extreme and she's quite out there. And my views aren't particularly extreme and not remotely out there. But I'm a different adult now in regards to all those subjects to the one that I was 10 years ago. And I embrace that.
Yeah, it's so interesting, isn't
it? It's so interesting. And also, you know that thing as an older person when you learn something new? I remember I learned Spanish once because I was going backpacking as an older woman in Central America. So I learned Spanish. And just that act of sitting in a class and learning something as an adult was so exciting. It was like opening a door that I'd closed the day I left university. But when you're really learning like a new skill or a new craft or something, and I think the older you get, the more you have to purposefully kick that door open and try to learn new things because it's exciting. And if you don't, that's when I think you start becoming, your world becomes smaller.
Yeah, you start to, everything you narrow. Starts to close in.
Yeah. You know, I will see an article online or in a magazine about something I don't know anything about. And rather than going, "Ooh, tell me about this," I'll go, "Oh, I'm not having that as well." Oh,
yeah, God, not another thing.
Not another thing.
And when you find yourself thinking that, which I'm sure everybody does, I certainly do, that's the time you have to go,
I've got to.
This way.
Yeah.
It's downhill all the way.
Yeah, it is. This is where narrowness comes.
It was when I had my first, well, it wouldn't have been my first menopause symptoms, but the kind of going off I went off a bit of a cliff when I was 46. So I just left Red, 6 months left Red. Lauren and I started working on the pool, trying to raise money. Perfect timing to lose your fucking marbles. And I literally did, I mean, I've had like depression and all of that, but this was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. My confidence went through the floor, like chronic anxiety. I didn't go as far as thinking I had dementia. Like some people I've spoken to actually went to the doctor and said, "I think I've got early onset dementia."
I did.
Did you?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
And what did they say? Did they say, "No, it's..."
She said, it was quite recently, it was only 2 months ago.
Oh, wow.
I went in and I said, I think you should test me for Alzheimer's. And she said, "Are you menopausal?" And I went, "Yeah." And she went, "Well, it's that." And I went, no, it can't be that, because it's really serious. And she said, "But it is that, because that's one of the main symptoms." And I said, "Look, I'm 58. I'm quite bright. I read loads of shit. I listen, and I, who knows about stuff to do with things like this. You can't tell me that this is this is menopause, and how can I have got to this stage in my life and not known that? Not had any idea."
Literally, if I had a tenner for everybody who said this, it's like everybody knows about the hot flushes because they're funny.
Yes.
Everybody knows about the middle-aged spread because it's funny and you can be mocked for it. But nobody tells you that for a period of time that could be a year and could be 10 years, you will totally lose yourself.
I couldn't remember words.
Yeah.
I began with the scary thing. So I would say things like, "Can you go up the up down those things, the thing that if you want to go to the stairs,
can
you
stairs? Oh my God!
Yeah, go up the stairs and get that thing for me." And because it was so humiliating to me, I wasn't being particularly judged by anyone at home more than they normally do, and they laugh at me all the time anyway. But to myself, it was so humiliating that I found myself not speaking rather than going through this ridiculous charades thing of trying to communicate what I wanted to communicate. And so I became lesser. I became smaller and quieter and littler because it was humiliating to myself. I had no idea how to do words out of my own mouth.
Yeah.
And all I've ever done my entire life is done words out of my own mouth.
Exactly.
It's my job.
Yeah. And does your brain do that thing where it flatlines? Literally, you'll be
yes.
started.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have that on stage. And it's like, And I've got to a point now where I just say, I've forgotten where I was going with that, sorry.
No, it's awful.
It's just, you know.
But the thing is, it's so much less awful when you know what it is. Mm-hmm. It's so much less awful when you're not thinking, I'm old people's home for me. I'm on my way.
It's so shocking that you don't know what that is. Because it truly isn't something that people talk about. But I can't believe you only just got it. I had that such a long time ago.
Well, no, that's the other thing. Because I was through the menopause. You know, my period stopped 4 years ago. But the brain fog only began about a year ago.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Because I had the brain fog really early on.
No. And I think that was another reason. But I mean, I still didn't know brain fog was part of it. But the fact that I wasn't, you know, in the middle of my menopause or at the eye of the storm of it was another reason why I thought.
I think one of the things that I was thinking when that was happening to me, and now I know it's happened to you as well, and it's happened to every single person I know, is millennials would not put up with this.
No.
They would not put up with this shit. The fact that this really shitty thing happens to more than half of the population. And we don't know about it.
No, they will certainly know about it. I mean, in so many ways, they're carving out a better world, aren't they? Scarlett did this big protest about period poverty a couple of years ago, where they were trying, she and a group of young activists were trying to get the government to use some of the tampon tax revenue that they had sloshing around. Sloshing. I love that word. When does cash ever slosh around?
Yeah, exactly.
Never happened. But trying to use some of the tampon tax revenue to pay for free sanitary products for girls who were on free school meals. So, you know, people who really needed the money would get it in that way. And they did a fantastic campaign, including a march of 2,000 teenage girls on Downing Street with placards and microphones.
I remember
and
it. Yeah.
It was great. And they set up a little stage on the street. She got all the permissions. And they had about 12 speakers, including three MPs and some like famous comedians and models. And Deborah Francis White turned up, and Aisling Bea, and they all spoke, and Daisy Lowe and people. And they all talked about their periods, and some of them were on their periods. And they stood up outside Downing Street and said, I'm on my period and I want to talk about periods. And as a, what was I then, 55-year-old woman, 56-year-old woman, I had to have a big talk to myself about it, because I sat there, stood there, thinking, you can't say, you can't do, shh, everybody should, okay, we can talk about this without actually saying the P word, and definitely don't talk about being on your, and I went into that rally with a taboo, because I'm in my 50s and it was a taboo. It's always been a taboo. I mean, not a massive taboo, but definitely not something you discussed in public.
Pretend it wasn't happening, didn't you?
Because
you
all did, of that.
You didn't go,
we all do.
Oh, look, we're different. We're having a period. Because in the 80s, you kind of had to pretend that you were the same. There were no differences. I deserve it as much as.
But also, you just wouldn't say, you wouldn't mention, you know, a man might say, I'm hungover.
Yeah.
That's fine, but you wouldn't say I've got my period.
Yeah.
That's why I'm slightly under par today or something. It's just, you wouldn't do it. Anyway, I went in there with all of that, and 2 hours later I came out different, because I had listened to 12 different people talking about their periods and women's periods and our country's periods and the government's attitude towards periods and people who stuff socks down their pants because they can't afford tampons and their periods. And when you have exposure to that sort of dialogue for that, you know, you change. And that's what I think this generation are doing, just by talking about it, just by airing it, whether or not they're shouting about it, but they are changing the conversation. And the next okay, I haven't quite got to this place with the next campaign she did, as you can tell from my body language right now.
Yeah, it's kind of
I've just doubled up.
Right up, yeah.
But the next little mini campaign they did with their activism group was called Girls Wank 2.
Yeah.
And I went along to the meeting, the inaugural and I think only meeting of Girls Wank 2, and there were 150 girls in a pop-up shop that they rented for the night talking about the fact that girls wank too, and that boys can say, ooh, wanking, and girls can't. And I went in.
I love the way your voice went quiet.
I know, and I can't even look you in the eye while I'm having this conversation. But I went in with my head on the floor, and by the time I came out an hour later, I was vaguely upright. I mean, I haven't got to the place where I was embracing it. We did, yeah, we got there again. So I didn't quite get to the stage where I could really go, yes, girls, I do. But I'd certainly moved to the fact that I can have this semi-conversation with you about it. So, you know, that in itself was progress as well.
I definitely think...
They're very cool.
They're very cool, and they have made a change. And I think that that change, I definitely felt like, okay, everybody's talking about periods now. We know loads about periods. We know loads about pregnancy. You know, menopause is another change in women's lives, and nobody talks about it. And we have to start talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's why one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, but also because it was so traumatic for me going into menopause without knowing what the fucking hell was happening to me. But I think we're really seeing a change since that, you know, that period campaign that you're talking about, that, you know, people are talking about menopause now. People are still twitchy. I mean, you still get, you know, sometimes I ask people to do this podcast and they're like, oh, well, I have to say how old I am. Like, well, kind of the point, really. It's about celebrating women north of 40 and talking about our lives and where we're going. And, you know, menopause is a big part of that. And isn't that the point? Just to make it something that happens to everybody? I mean, I think when... Earlier, Richard was talking about Davina, just talking about her menopause. And I think people are doing that now.
Yeah, what he was referencing was a rough cut of a Sport Relief documentary that we watched last night. And in it, Davina talks about the Sport Relief challenge that she did a few years ago, where she swam across a lake and cycled 100 miles and walked 1,000 miles or something, you know.
Legend.
Sort of thing. And at one point she said, you know, the worst thing about doing the cycling bit was that she had her period when she was doing it, and she got a blister on her private parts, and then the blister popped, and she made it very funny. But you know, that's a BBC One primetime documentary, and there's that amazing woman on it, and she didn't bat an eyelid in saying, I was on my period and I got a blister on my vagina. And it was like, oh, we've come a long way.
We've really come a long way, I think. And now we have to get hold of that and keep it going through the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. But isn't it weird that it's only through the talking about it? And thank God that there is the talking about it, that things will change.
I can't believe you have or would tolerate it, but have you had any age shaming?
Oh, probably lots, but I don't remember it.
Ignore it.
No, it's just brain fog, can't remember. I feel very strongly... And again, I will say it just again, because it's really relevant. I'm solvent and I'm healthy. So these are first world problems in a way. But I do very much not want to be someone who is pretending to be an age other than that, the age that I am. Mm. I don't want to get to 60 and think, oh no, I'm 60. I want to think, oh great, what's going to happen now? And I will get to 60 at the same time as my youngest child leaves home. And I'm determined to make that my best decade, apart from my 70s, which will then be my best decade if I'm still alive.
But it's so much better way to approach it than, oh, I'm dreading 50, or I'm dreading 60, which is what most people say, but and what I've been guilty of.
There's an interesting thing that I was thinking about this morning, though, about the wrinkles and the ageing thing. You know that thing when you stop pretending something isn't happening and you just embrace it and it's all better? Mm. And you think it'll be worse and it's not, it's just better. And there's so many areas, like I don't run very fast. But if I was running against someone else, I would just say to them, I'm not as quick a runner as you are. And I would still enjoy the run and give it a go. But with wrinkles, it's like we put a huge amount of effort into trying to say, I'm not wrinkling. I'm not, my face isn't aging. Obviously I'm aging and I can even tell you how old I am and, you know, be okay with that. But on my face, I want my face not to be aging. And it's such a lie that we tell ourselves that it's important that other people can't see in the wrinkles what we're doing. And then I meet someone like Ruthie Rogers, the cook, who is absolutely covered in the most beautiful wrinkles you've ever seen.
She's got the most amazing face.
It's the best face. It's a face of cheek and comedy and spirit and twinkle and experience and life. And she's going, I'm this person. Just I'm like me. I'm me. Just like I can say, I don't run very fast. I'd like to say, yeah, these are my wrinkles. I'm okay with that. But we're not okay with it. And everyone puts on a cream hoping it's going to be the cream that, you know, will just smooth them all away and they're not there anymore. And yet if you could look in the mirror and go, if I could look in the mirror and go, these are my wrinkles. Welcome to the bits of my face that are older. I'm aiming towards a stage where I go, yep, I'm not going to look for the creams that will cover this up. I'm not interested in the cover-up sticks. I'm okay. In fact, I'm happy with the fact that this is what my face looks like now.
How close are you to that?
I don't know. Some days I'm really close to it, and other days when I feel less confident, I'm miles away from it. But I think the more I sort of say it to myself out loud in a way, the more I kind of address it, the more we have these conversations, the more I meet people like Ruthie Rogers and admire them rather than, you know, surrounding myself with, you know, I won't have a beauty magazine in the house. They make you feel ugly. What's the point of that? And it's a work in progress. I don't know. I'm trying.
Do you feel like you mentioned magazines then, do you feel like the representation of older women is getting any better?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do. You see more older models, like you see more diverse models. I mean, I think all that side of things is changing, and that's the younger generation shouting about it, and it's coming up everywhere. And I love that. I love watching my mum and seeing the sort of, seeing how people enjoy her company, my friends enjoy her company, whereas I think 20 years ago it would have been weird having a 90-year-old at dinner, and now, I don't know.
She's just an interesting...
She's just the most interesting. She's the most interesting dinner guest you could have. You know, she's got more stories. She's got more funny attitudes. She comes out with more brilliant things than anyone I know.
Do you remember her going through her menopause?
I remember her telling me that she... There was a stage in her life, I think in her 50s, where she looked in the mirror and she made an active decision to put on weight. She's always been very slender. And she said she suddenly looked scrawny. And so she made an active decision to eat up a bit and sort of put on half stone or a stone or something so that she looked more settled in her skin.
The kind of bum face thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I would imagine that was her menopause. I don't know, actually. No, I mean, how weird is this? I've never had a conversation with her about her menopause.
No, it's not weird at all. It's what most people say. And most people don't have a conversation... who I've spoken to, don't have a conversation with their mum about menopause until they start having their own. And then the conversation usually goes something like, "What? How old were you when you had menopause?" Because, of course, you're told that you won't have your menopause until your mum had hers, which for me was like a 10-year difference.
Was it?
Yeah, no similarity at all. And then the conversation goes, "Well, we just put up with it."
So my mum didn't put up with it. I do know that. I don't know what the menopause were like, but I know she took HRT from the age of 48. And then only came off it a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, so like 40 years.
40 years of HRT.
Amazing.
And she swore by it. I mean, she began her own theatre company at the age of 60 and was producing 25 shows a year and acting in two of them and cleaning the toilets.
She's a rock star.
Yeah, she's great.
She's a legend.
She is. She was an evacuee in the war.
Yeah.
And she got evacuated to Oxford, and the person who she got evacuated to was C.S. Lewis.
Oh, my God, really?
So she was Lucy in Lion, the Witch,
the
Wardrobe.
She was in the wardrobe.
Yeah, that's my mummy.
Oh, my God.
She lived with him for 5 years. Isn't that weird?
You've got all the family stories.
It's quite a big one, that, isn't
that's
it?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And was there a wardrobe? I mean, obviously not with Narnia out the other side, but...
I don't know.
You don't know?
Well, there probably was. I think there were lots of them, actually.
Yeah.
<don't know.
laughs> Ask her for me.
I will.
Back. Wow. God,
yeah.
I can't even begin to beat that. This is kind of it feels a bit ironic in the context of some of the things we've been saying about how empowering and inspiring younger women are. But what one thing would you tell younger women?
It's just there's a thing about when you get older that you really, really want to pass on everything. And don't let other people make the mistakes that you made. I've got an awful lot to say about being a mum having done it for 24 years, you know, the amount of self-blame and lack of confidence and shame that we put ourselves through as women in parenting, because the jeopardy is so big and the stakes are so high and it's so complicated. And I just want to do anything to make women less hard on themselves than I was when I was going through the early years of having small children. I sort of look back and just am appalled that I was so unkind to myself, you know, and I think it's what we do, and it's rubbish. I would want to say to young people that it gets more and more fun, because in my life it has done.
Yeah, that's really true.
I was, you know, I was okay as a teenager. I was a bit of a muddle, but I wasn't too bad. And then in my 20s, I was a bit cocky and running around and trying to create a career. And in my 30s, I was having kids and racked with insecurities about that. But, and then in my 40s, it began to get a bit better. And my 50s have been great.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same.
I feel I'm growing into my skin and growing into my mind. And I look back on the, you know, the odd photo of me when I was younger, and I think, oh God, I knew nothing. And I had no idea how to handle myself or the world or my life or the people around me. And I'm genuinely better at that now. I'm genuinely clearer on what matters. And I couldn't have been then. You can't jump it. You have to sort of live it. But once you get to the place where you know what matters to you and you know how to balance sort of duty and responsibility and fun, it's just better. I mean, my life is more joyful now than it was when I was younger, even though my face is more wrinkled and my hair is more grey. I'm having a better time now, and I'm determined, and I'm sure that my 60s are going to be one up from this, because how can it not go on getting better as long as I can stay healthy?
What would your superpower be?
I'd really love time travel. I'd really love to go back and just calm myself down a little bit. I'd really like to go back to me as a teenager and tell her that I was never going to lose that extra half stone, so stop worrying about
it. Stop beating yourself up about it.
I'd really like to go back to the first time I snogged Richard and do it again.
Oh, that's lovely.
Well, that's been my joy.
30 years.
30 years.
It's amazing, isn't it? And in each other's pockets as well.
Yeah, but I think that's probably why it's been so good, actually. I think we work very well in each other's pockets. You know, I think it connects us on every level. It means that there's always stuff to talk about and always stuff to do. And I really admire what he does and really like who he is. And so it's no hardship partnering him on every level.
Any temptation to get married?
No. I did propose to him once, 29 years ago, and he said no.
Oh, how did that go down?
Well, it was a bit of a surprise.
Oh, all right then. One cuppa.
He said, I don't want to marry you, but can we be not married for the rest of our lives? I went, all right then.
Oh,
what was that?
That's a really nice no.
Yeah, that was a good no.
Yeah. I think I might have heard someone else say that. Mistake on screen.
Yeah, you know, you've got to use what you got.
Yeah. Who are your old bird role models?
Ruthie Rogers, who I love, who runs the River Cafe and is as feisty and funny and fuck it in her 70s or 60s or whatever she is as I dream of being. My mum, age 92, I once said to her, well, what's the secret? Because she's really remarkable. And she said, I have the same lunch every day, and I think that's got a lot to do with it. And I said, what is it? And she went, glass of red wine and a packet of crisps. Every day.
Oh, my God, I love your mum.
Every day.
Glass of red wine and a packet of crisps. What flavour?
Well, that's an interesting subject. Cheesy Watsits, weirdly, she's quite fond of.
Cheesy Watsits?
Yeah, she likes quite extreme flavours. She likes a prawn cocktail skip.
I love a prawn cocktail skip. Clearly, I'm going to be a hot.
She likes all the really sort of gross ones. Oh, she also likes anything that's on a discount at Tesco's. The cheaper, the better. And also, she only likes cheap red wine.
I am your mum. And lastly, how many fucks do you give?
All of them and none of them. I still mind about lots of things and then still couldn't give a fucking fuck about lots of things. But I think if you end up in one camp or the other, you're in trouble. I think you have to go on massively caring and massively not giving a shit concurrently forever. That's what I'd like to be. If you really, really didn't give a fuck, you'd be such an arsehole to be with. And you'd be an arsehole in the world. But I've stopped giving fucks about lots of things that I used to give a fuck about. Like my wrinkles.
Emma Freud, you are, like, totally brilliant. You are my old bird role model.
Am I?
You are.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
That was a joy. What a great way to spend the morning.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your feedback. You can reach me on Twitter at Sam Baker and Instagram at The Other Sam Baker using the hashtag The Shift. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each week on Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate and subscribe because it really does help other people find us.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.